Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, November 26, 2012. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I'm joined by two football writers who hopefully had a nice Thanksgiving. So we have Adam Pincus.
What's up, everybody?
And Joe Morgan.
Hey, how's it going?
So how was your guys' Thanksgivings? Good?
It was good. I was in New York for a day.
How many hours? This was weird to me. Can we talk about this?
I'd say 20, probably.
And you spent, how long is the flight?
It was 2.5. It was JetBlue, which had sweet movies and TV.
Oh, we'll get to movies in a second.
Well, I watched football. Thursday football on Thanksgiving. I saw that game.
So you didn't get there till the afternoon?
No.
That's nuts. Okay.
About 6 o'clock, which was great. And then on the way back, I saw Step Up 3D Revolution, which was surprisingly great.
Nice.
It was actually pretty good.
Step Up 3D Revolution.
No. It was pretty good. I liked it. It kept me interested.
Wow.
Lots of good-looking people in that flick.
And Joe, you traveled too, right?
Yeah. I went home to see my parents in Virginia, and it was, it was pretty standard Thanksgiving. The meal was normal, and they don't like football, and so I was just following football on my phone.
No football on Thanksgiving?
While we watched the DVR at Macy's Parade.
So, un-American.
Ew.
Yeah.
First of all, parade is one of those things you have to watch it live or just no.
Well, I hate parades.
My sister.
You just hate all parades?
Parades are pointless.
Wait, your sister was, in the parade?
Yeah, with her dance team.
Were they, on TV, or were they just, one of the millions of things that went towards the end?
I mean, they're one of the million things that go, but I'm pretty sure they got on TV.
Was it her high school, or was it just, a special team?
It's high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah, she stayed in a Hilton with, thousands of other high school dance teams, so of course I stopped by for a little bit.
Why are we just
God.
This probably justifies the New York trip now.
Yeah.
I was wondering why you were
High school dance teams, it's cool. Now it's cool.
Okay.
All right. We got to get to football things, but Joe, you can have your 5 seconds for the movie review.
Okay, I recently caught The Amazing Spider-Man, which is the remake with Andrew Garfield.
Which one is that?
The newest one.
It came out this summer. It was at the Red Box.
The giant lizard. And not Toby.
And basically, the 5 second review is this. Just rewatched the one from 2002.
Okay.
I like that.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
So we talked about our Thanksgiving things. Florida's Thanksgiving went pretty well, I would say. Solid win against Florida State. But as always, we're going to start with the bottom line. BCS standings, Florida's still number 4, but they are just behind Georgia. Georgia's number 3 with a 89-11, and Florida's 88-82. So very, very thin margin there, but obviously Georgia's either going to move up or down based on the SEC title game and what happens in there. So I guess we'll start where we always do, which is, do you think Florida's ranked in the right spot? Would you say higher or lower? Where do you think, based on what we saw this weekend and the body of work throughout the year?
For the circumstances, I think they are in the right spot. Muschamp said today that he can't do anything about the rules and how it's all panned out for the Gators. But I do think, looking at their resume, there's been a lot of talk that, what other team has gone 4-1 against, opponents that have had time in the top 10 this year? I mean, you really look at it from afar, Florida, maybe, yes, their offense isn't the prettiest, but they certainly have had arguably one of the best seasons out of anyone in college football.
I've been thinking about this for a while, and I'm like, yeah, well, Georgia beat Florida, and Alabama's Alabama. And then I'm thinking, no, I mean, Florida's had a better season than both of these teams.
Yeah,
they
absolutely
beat more good teams, and
they have better wins.
Yeah, I mean, okay. This is what my column is about. That's running in the paper on Tuesday. Is that
sneak preview?
It doesn't matter. It's a resume, and it doesn't matter how terrible Florida looked in these wins. The fact is, they beat these teams and they played more of these teams. I mean, I'm not saying that Florida could beat Alabama on the field tomorrow, but if you look at the resume, Florida has a better resume than both Georgia and Alabama, even after an SEC championship win, I believe. Because if Georgia beats Alabama, Alabama's only going to be the 4th bowl eligible team they're going to play this year. Or 5th, sorry, excuse me. So,
But Georgia won head-to-head and Georgia beat Alabama.
Yeah, but
I feel like that Georgia game was a fluke for Florida. 6 turnovers they gave up, that's basically the opposite of what Florida has been built upon this entire season. And it hasn't happened since. And
they were still one score away from tying, potentially tying the game.
He was an outlier, but Georgia gave it away just as many times, and that's just as unusual. They don't turn the ball over a lot, and Murray threw however many picks and just looked terrible the whole game. So I thought it kind of canceled out how sort of bad they were. I mean, you think if you want to look at it in those terms, Florida's had a lot of games where they – how many times did they intercept Manuel, and he only came into the game with six or seven?
Yeah, they had five turnovers and only got 14 points, which I do think that was their problem against Georgia. And it looked like that would have been the nail in the coffin against FSU. But they were able to come back late.
Now, before we get too far off of what Joe is trying to say, I think the problem I have with saying Florida ahead of Georgia or Alabama, whichever team wins, would be, first of all, that team would be the conference champion. That's got to be worth something. But also, the fact that Georgia's game was head-to-head, and I think, you're just defining resume as wins and losses, which is one way to look at it, but things like margin of victory should play a role, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and,
but
Florida's does not stack up.
You talk about the conference championship, though, and conference championships just don't matter anymore. They don't. Alabama won the national championship last year, and they weren't even the best team in the SEC West.
No, it's not important, but getting in that game tells you something about that team and should have some value, or else then they shouldn't do it.
Yeah, but, I mean, they mean nothing, though, because, like, just because you lose one week and not – I mean, you could look at that and say, well, Georgia got beat by four touchdowns against a team that Florida just destroyed. I mean, it's just...
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. The transitive thing always works both ways because it's a pretty terrible way to look at it.
Yeah, I'm just saying there's arguments for both sides here.
I do think the SEC Championship is the one game that truly matters more often than not, especially this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a national semifinal, and it's going to be every year until the playoff happens.
I mean, I'm not married to the idea that the SEC Championship is all that important in and of itself, but, I mean, that team would have a win against the top three team just right there in that game, so that's worth something.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, but, I mean, if it's only the, you know, third top, it's only the second top 10 you beat all year, you know?
I still go back to just how soundly those teams have beaten a lot of the other guys on their schedule, and I think that has to be Alabama specifically. I know Georgia's played close against Kentucky and a couple other people, but Alabama specifically, just how dominant they are in a lot of their wins. I think it means a lot in terms of, you know, the way football works, close games can go either way, and that Florida got as lucky as they did to win some of the close ones is, I don't know, lucky in a way. I mean, a lot of games they won soundly, but some of them came down to the wire and one or two bad breaks could have gone the other way. And if they got one more break their way, they'd be undefeated and we wouldn't even be talking about this, but I don't know.
Are we complaining about possibly going to New Orleans, though?
No, that's a pretty sweet deal for them. I mean, honestly, if you think about...
That's a sweet deal for us.
If you think about...
Bourbon Street, come on.
You think about before the year, teams unranked. I think the most optimistic projection among us was Pincus with 9 wins, and here they are with...
9-3.
And here they are... Yeah, and you were counting bowl game in that. And so here they are with 11. I mean, what did you guys think is the biggest thing just overall that caused the turnaround, the biggest key, if you have to point to one thing?
I think the defense just took the next step from being good to elite, and that was just basically the forcing of turnovers. I think that was the biggest, and then obviously the special teams. But, I mean, yeah, the defense, special teams.
For me, it really was Florida's ability to come back. You know, they looked out against Florida State. But I tell you what, I'm pretty sure that no one on that sideline thought they were, you know, in any sort of trouble, you know, against the Seminoles at Doak Campbell. And really, last year the defense, it was tough for them because the offense was so bad. And I guess they were too tired to force these turnovers. And now, them being able to take that next step, and whenever they need to make a play, defense always seemed to make one this year. I think that's a testament to, I guess, the coaches. Mm-hmm. What do y'all think?
Second year in the system, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, they look better and faster, and they look like they're attacking more. And I think at one point Quinn said that their defensive coordinator Dan Quinn said they are running more blitzes and doing more things that they couldn't do last year because they just could only establish kind of a baseline level that they were comfortable working with in game. So that certainly helped them take the next step in. I mean, if you think about how bad the offense is, it really is like the defense has been the key to everything.
Well, their depth is amazing. The fact they have Antonio Morrison, a freshman linebacker, make the play of the game.
Yeah.
I watched that game on replay today, and that hit was so loud. It made me cringe watching it.
Yeah, it was bad.
They hit on EJ Manuel.
Yeah, I can't believe Manuel came back into the game. But anyway. Yeah, and I think another key is in terms of the turnover margin. It's obviously much better than last year, but I think as bad as the offense has been, we certainly saw on Saturday them establish the run, and they've been able to do that. It was key against LSU, and it was key on Saturday, and we'll talk more about that later. But in general, one thing that I want to say that's kind of along the lines of what we were just talking about is they have not turned the ball over as much, which, coupled with the defense forcing more, has led to the margin, which has been such the big difference compared to last year. I think that's the biggest thing. I think Muschamp said this morning that he thinks that's the biggest thing.
Well, also, Florida has an identity now. You know, last year they weren't necessarily a good downhill running team, and this year they're physical, run you up the middle, and run it some more. And they have a, you know, that defense, and that's another big thing is they finally developed a sort of identity that they could rally behind.
Yeah, and they really are just, for all the kind of talk, and it's a little bit cliche, but they really are, I think, just a lot tougher this year. And a lot, just a lot, they play more physical, and I guess you can fault them for not bringing that every game and for playing down to the level of their competition, which Muschamp finally sort of came out and admitted after the Florida State game, but, I mean, just generally the toughness and the attitude that they bring is different from what we saw last year when, like I said, you know, 2 years ago Meyer called him broken, and last year Muschamp called him soft, and now that's definitely not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a little more specifically into this game, it was a very strange game in that I felt like there were three different points when it was kind of over.
Yeah.
I think I felt like when Florida State, you know, finally got the lead back, went up 20-13, and kind of was just so in control at that point in the second half.
Well,
I thought those
20 straight points, was it not?
I thought, I just thought it was kind of done at that point.
At that point, I went and looked up the stats. So I wanted to see the last time they lost to Florida State and Georgia in the same year, and I think it was 89.
Wow.
And I went and looked up that stat. So
that's
like, this game is
major great. Number crunching.
Yeah. And
wait. Florida State and Georgia in the same year?
Yeah.
Didn't that happen last year?
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyway.
No, but like.
2 years in a row, you mean, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. But like, yeah, like, okay, yeah, I just sounded really stupid there. Yeah. But like, yeah, like the last time that happened was like the 80s. And that was before Florida became like a big time program. And so I was looking at that number. So I was like, this game is over. It's
right, done. Right. And it, you know, 20-13 is 20-13, not a huge margin. But then it just, the way the game was going and how in control they were on both sides. And Florida was killing themselves with penalties and things that they usually do. But and then it seemed like you guys said, the Morrison hit was, I thought, the play that really swung it. You see Gilly score on the next play.
Mm-hmm. That was a great running play. Jalapio, hell of a block.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think Gillislee's getting enough credit for that run because he was, like, trying to go outside, and he ended up coming up the middle.
And Xavier Nixon didn't hold, which I think was an accomplishment in itself.
You know, overall, I thought Nixon wasn't bad.
Yeah, the offensive line was great.
Yeah,
Chaz Green really struggled.
No, he had a couple. Well, Warner's a great player.
Right. But, I mean, the Carradine opposite him is just as good, and Nixon, I thought, you know, did a pretty good job containing him. So a little bit of credit there. But, again, we talked about the run game a little bit. I got the numbers here. Florida ran 244 yards, 140 and 2 touchdowns for Gillislee, and then 81 on 8 carries for Matt Jones, most of that in the fourth quarter. I mean, what did you guys see from him?
He looked great. Earlier in the season, he wasn't using his size and was kind of dancing around going east-west. He was going north-south, really, you know, taking advantage of the good blocking on the offensive line, and he looks like a player. Florida's backfield in the coming years looks very, very good.
Well, it's at least going to have him.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's going to have him, and then you got Adam Lane and Kelvin Taylor, two top recruits coming in for next year. We'll see what happens there. But Matt Jones looks like a workhorse.
And yeah, and the crazy thing about Matt Jones' growth this year is, like, before the season started, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the general consensus was Gillislee and Mac Brown were the bruisers, and Jones is more of a speed guy. Then,
well, he was always a bigger guy, but he was just kind of a soft bigger guy.
Yeah, like, he wasn't, like, I mean, he wasn't the guy on 3rd and 1, 4th, like, 4th and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Harrison was calling him the bruiser after the game last night, on Saturday night. And, I mean, I just thought that was a real testament to, like, how he's progressed this year. And then Muschamp today, obviously, with his comments saying that he's really come along and practiced better and things like that.
Well, the biggest thing for that is I don't think the coaches were necessarily confident that he can hold on to the football and be that guy on 3rd and 1 at the beginning of the year. Never him to, you know, improve in practice, mm-hmm. and you know, as the year went on, that says something. It's credit to him.
And it's a real small sample, but I thought he looked a lot more kind of decisive and like a one-cut guy than earlier in the year where he seemed a little hesitant. Mm-hmm. So certainly says a lot about his progression, and I think the Florida State game says a lot about where the offensive line is at. And, again, what they did in this game compared to the 3 weeks before this against, you know, Louisiana and Jacksonville State and Missouri, they looked dominant in this game, and they had looked, you know, thoroughly average in the 3 weeks before this. Does it just come down to health? That's what the...
I think a lot of it is just, it's hard to get up for those games. And I know that's like such an abstract
You play like 10
thing.
Games a year and this is all you do. Like, how do you not get up for it?
Well, it's, I mean, like, they...
You have nothing else going on except these 12 games.
In class.
Yeah, okay.
No, in I class. Mean, you know, Jacksonville State, man, I had a hard time getting motivated to write a story for that game. Like,
I fell asleep in the press box a little bit. Missouri, Louisiana, and Jacksonville State.
Took a little nap.
Little snoozer.
Just no one cared. Why should you care, you know? And it was like injuries and the loss to Georgia, I'm sure, had to be deflating in some sense, you know? I mean, you're playing a team that you're probably going to beat, and you're injured, you're tired, you're beaten up, you're not undefeated anymore, the fans are kind of apathetic. I mean, I know I'm not really big into abstract, you know, not non-concrete, you know, reasons for things, but I really believe that was a contributing factor.
That's sad, then.
Well, it's just the state of, it's just the way it is, man.
That's how they've been the whole year. I don't know if that's an excuse. I don't think it really.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying. I'm just saying it.
I don't think it's right. But if you look at the games, how do you explain them dominating LSU, dominating South Carolina, and dominating Florida State, and looking like against you know those three lesser opponents in Missouri, Louisiana, and Jacksonville State? It doesn't make sense. That's really what it is.
Basically, Louisiana Lafayette would have been a contender in the SEC East this year.
Based on how they played Florida, yeah. I don't doubt that.
That's what I honestly believe. I mean, I'm not saying, like, I don't think Florida is the best team in the country. I frankly, based on their talent level, I don't think they deserve to be in Miami at the end of the year. I'm saying resume-wise, they deserve to be there. But it's just, you look at, you know, just the way they play their competition. Muschamp said it Saturday, right?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. It seems weird to me, but I don't think there's any other way you guys can explain it, like you said, so... again, looking at the other aspect of the running game, Driscoll finished with negative yards, but that one play where he ran for 31, he looked fine. And I think I was certainly doubting whether he would be the same given all that was up with the ankle and everything like that, but looks like 100%, and whether that was him toughing it out, I think Muschamp said after the game he was at 85 to 90%. So whether that's just Driscoll toughing it out or whether he's actually fine or whether they were kind of blowing it up and just gave him the week before off for the hell of it, I don't know. But he looked pretty good in this game running when he got out there and did that. And then in terms of passing, was solid too. 15 to 23 for 147 and a touchdown. Again, given the pass rush he was facing, I thought it was a very, very good game for him.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for Driscoll isn't necessarily the rushing yards, but is he able to throw the ball accurately on the run? And he had a hell of a game doing that. The touchdown to Dunbar to make it 30-20. He rolled out to his right and threw a great pass on the run, and led Dunbar into the end zone. That's Driscoll's biggest strength, I think, is throwing on the run. He certainly improved on that this year. His ankle looked fine, and really could Brissett do that? I don't know, but Driscoll, his ability to throw outside the pocket has helped the Gators this season immensely.
And then you mentioned Brissett. That was one of the things that came up today. Do you guys have any kind of thoughts about whether he's going to stick around or whether he's going to go based on what we've seen here? Because Muschamp said, nothing
Muschamp
he could see.
No.
I was going to say what Muschamp said regarding Driscoll was interesting to me was that he couldn't envision a scenario where Driscoll's not the starter next season. So when if you hear that and you're Jacoby Brissett, then does that change your guys' thoughts on what he might do going forward?
Well, I mean, Muschamp said that Pop Saunders is out for the bowl game with a, quote, injury, and he won't. So, I mean, like, yeah, to take everything with, like, a, well, so, yeah, I mean, Brissett's got to be gone. I don't really
for
see
him. For his
sake, and, like, with the playmate, I mean, with the competitor that he is, I mean, when you hear that, you're like, well, I want to play. And you can't just bank on Driscoll getting injured to play. I mean, this guy obviously has pro aspirations. I don't know.
I think Brissett's a big-time SEC talent. He has a good arm. I can see him going to...
He needs some fine-tuning, obviously, some coaching up. But I think he's a talented guy, and he could probably start for another Division I program easily.
For sure.
No, yeah, I mean, he could play somewhere, and he's got 2 years of eligibility left, so you'd have to sit out the year, but... He could certainly has time to kind of, you know, 2 solid years maybe. Maybe he wants to go play with Charlie Weiss, or maybe Kansas, he wants to go to West Virginia or Miami or some of the other schools he was considering before he came here. But
well, Tennessee was on his list too, wasn't it? They're losing their quarterback.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of places where he could go, but...
You know what he could do? Play basketball.
Yeah, go to Kansas. Boom.
No, he could suit up. He could suit up for Billy Dee's team. They need some rebounding.
No, but seriously, I don't know. It's I really have a hard time seeing anybody that was as highly recruited and as clearly talented as he is kind of just taking a back seat for 4 years and then calling it quits, you know? It doesn't seem to add up to me that way.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to Tyler Murphy yet and just be like, well, you know, I'm having a good time.
So, I mean, again, that's part of the wait and see. But anyway, getting back to the game and flipping over to the defensive side, I mean, Florida really did a good job in the turnovers we discussed, but... Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that came back to the pass rush. You think about the manual, the first pick where he threw it high and Elam was there to grab it, and a couple of the other plays where he was just under pressure and tried to get rid of it and was misfired as a result. So, I mean, what did you guys see from the pressure? Did you think? I guess what I would ask is, for me, it's the way it has been all season, where I thought the reason they got such good pressure was because of the way Muschamp and Quinn drew it up, unless because of anything anybody did individually. But what did you guys see in that regard?
I feel like the four-man rush has really improved. I think Quinn's talked a lot about, like, we really need to improve our one-on-one matches, really need to improve. And I thought Hunter and Floyd got really good penetration. I remember that one. It was Floyd's first sack of the year, but, like, he basically, like, just fought into the backfield and ended up pulling down Manuel with, like, 2 fingers or something. But, I mean, I just remember seeing, like, Floyd and Hunter, like, really kind of blowing up a lot of stuff in the middle. Which I thought, I mean, they weren't necessarily getting into the backfield every time, but I feel like they were pushing, you know, the interior line off the ball a lot.
And although Florida doesn't have the sack artists like Florida State had with, you know, those two guys with something like 10-plus sacks, it's really been a team effort. And, you know, Florida may not have that one guy that they can depend on. Maybe that would have been Ronald Powell this year, but he got hurt. But it's really been a team effort every, you know, week in, week out. And it's pretty impressive. I think, you know, we said it a lot on podcasts, is really Dan Quinn kind of scheming it up and making sure his players are in a good position to make plays.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought, I don't know if I thought as much of the pass rush, the four-man rush as you did, Joe, but I think Sharif Floyd certainly had a good game, I thought, and came away with the sack, but generally I thought did a good job of getting a push and getting pressure like he does in most games. And in terms of beyond affecting the quarterback, I thought they did a good job, you know, stopping the running game, too. And Florida State has been good on the ground and still got 4.5 yards of carry, but really felt like they were contained throughout and couldn't really gash Florida for long runs the way a lot of other teams had done to this point in the year. So what did you guys see as the key to that part of it?
They just kept going back to – I mean, Florida State just kept going back to the pass. I thought it was weird. They were still letting them in throw after the first – picks.
Well, do you feel like they could have run it and didn't?
It was odd.
Passed the ball for 33 times. That's a lot.
I was kind of confused by that. I mean, like, they weren't getting much traction, but I feel like that eventually you would be able to. I mean,
Freeman had his longest rush was for 20 yards. He had 8 carries for 37. That's 4.6 yards per carry. You only got 8 attempts.
Right. No, like I said, they put up solid numbers. But
I mean, I haven't seen Florida State enough this season. But if, you know, Jeff Driscoll was throwing the ball for 33 times and your number one running back in Gillislee only carried the ball 8 times, no way in heck is Florida ever winning a football game like that.
Well, again, I don't know if it was as much Florida State game plan as they were playing behind for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I was, yeah.
At the end, they obviously had to pass a lot, and then in the beginning, they probably felt like they had to pass to get back into it. But in terms of individually on defense, I think it was another really strong game for Matt Elam. Comes away with the pick that we talked about, and then leads the team with 7 tackles. And we've discussed, you know, his value over the course of the season. But are you guys solidly in the camp that he's the best player on the defense, or are we looking at Floyd still? Or what's your guys' thoughts if you had to pick a guy out of the unit?
I think Elam, for his versatility, he can play any which position, dime, nickel, safety, emergency corner. He plays, you know, up, you know, at the line of scrimmage sometimes. He's that's his best attribute, and he's always, when he always makes a big play, you know, whether it's a big hit or something, he's hyping up the defense, hyping up the crowd. He's that leader of that squad. Maybe not vocally, but certainly with his play on the field.
Yeah, I would say Elam. I would say that Elam over Floyd, just because I feel like he's more valuable as a position grab. I mean, Floyd's a game changer, but at the same time, you have so much depth on the defensive line, and you have Omar Hunter at tackle already, who's already a good player, you know. And I feel like Elam really runs that secondary, and he helps out the younger guys like Luchez and, you know, Marcus Roberson and stuff, guys who are talented but kind of need that direction from an experience.
If Elam goes down, who else you got?
Right, especially with
Saunders.
He's hurt.
Yeah, he may be injured. Is he still on the team? I don't know.
He's kind of in that patch of land.
We'll find out next year. But no, but I think I'm with Pincus on this one in terms of the value of Elam a lot comes in the amount of different things he can do, where he can play some deep zone and he can play man-to-man coverage and he can get up in the box and play against the run. And I think that's why they like him in the nickel role, because it allows him to do all of those different things. Another guy that they've spoken very highly of recently, and who became the first two-way starter since 2002, Purifoy started in the backfield on offense and started at cornerback on defense. And
that's my guy.
Finished with
playmaker.
Finished with 6 tackles, 2nd on the team, and a forced fumble. I mean, there's a lot of people that kind of gush over what he's done and what he brings and his abilities, just from a size, speed, strength, playmaker standpoint. But Joe, I think this year, guy, go ahead.
Yeah, he's the best gunner in the country, without a doubt. I mean, he beats the punt returner.
As somebody who scouted the gunners of all 122 teams.
Yeah, no, just find me a gunner who's better than Luchez Purifoy.
Okay.
I mean, he's as Muschamp would say, he's a guy who throws his hat in there, you know?
Right.
He gets in the arena, right?
Yeah, he runs the arena. He owns the arena. Yeah. Luchez is making that number 15, you know, his own, which is kind of cool. You know, I feel like he's a really talented player. In my column a couple weeks ago, I advocated to put him at receiver more than they have. And I feel like he's a really talented player. He's a good playmaker. I've been really encouraged. They've been putting him on kick returns. I feel like he's a guy you really need to use. He's a really athletic guy. And then at corner, he's really made strides as well. I feel like early in the year, he had a lot of problems with penalties, I feel like, and still, like, throughout the season. I feel like over time, it's going to be fine-tuned.
I don't know if I see him taking on a significant role both ways, though. I want
to
say that.
I would like to see it.
Before we get into next year and before anything happens, I think they're just going to have him at cornerback, and that's going to be it.
Well, today Muschamp said he's going to be a quarterback.
Well, and he meant, like, primarily, because he was open to the possibility of him playing both ways a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't take, like, a single snap on offense next year. Yeah. Regardless of his ability to do it, I just don't, I don't know.
I'm just saying I'd like to see it happen.
No,
I feel like it would service them well to give them those opportunities. Especially when you have a guy like Frankie Hammond playing wide receiver.
Right.
You know?
And it is interesting to me that
what are you trying to say?
I'm trying to
instigator. It is interesting to me that we haven't seen more of him in the return game. But one guy, same position, who did make an impact in the return game this weekend was Marcus Roberson. Obviously, with DeBose being DeBose and with Saunders being Saunders, there's job openings there. And Roberson won he had a punt return for 51 yards, which was the longest of the season and the longest since Chernovoy had the number, like Brandon James in 2008 or something like that. So certainly there's some potential there, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had that great return against Jacksonville State, too.
Yeah.
I mean, surprised. I mean, like, maybe it was just, I mean, I doubt it was 2 flukes, so I just kind of wonder, I guess, I mean, I don't know why he hasn't had reps there before, because I didn't think Saunders was exceptional, you know? I just thought he made good decisions with fair catches.
Yeah, well, I mean, not necessarily. There were some of those that were real dumb.
Well, Roberson seems to have a knack for it. That's really, even on the, you know, his interceptions, he always seems to have, you know, run after the catch and make a return out of it. he just makes plays. And especially with Purifoy, it seems like the coaching staff is finally just, no matter what position you play, if you can make plays with the football, we're going to get you the ball. And especially with Purifoy, I'm looking at his recruiting page right now. 11th, best cornerback in the nation. He wasn't really a high-profile recruit. He's 4 stars, but the fact that he becomes arguably the best playmaker on your defense.
Rob was start ranking gunners.
Yeah, as a sophomore, is, I think, pretty impressive.
No, yeah, for sure. And then, especially because last year, he really didn't do a ton.
He was eh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was another freshman.
And I was looking at this for something I'm writing today for Palm Beaches. He, in the bowl game last year, had 5 tackles or something like that and was 3rd on the team. And I think Muschamp talked about how when Roberson went down, he had the neck injury. Mm-hmm. Purifoy had that month to practice and get ready for the bowl. And we're seeing the results of that this season. So, and another guy we're looking at is Jelani Jenkins has the broken bone in his foot. It's the metacarpal tarsal, I believe, Muschamp said.
I looked this up for a story that's going to run the Alligator on Tuesday. The metacarpal is in your finger.
Right, and
the metatarsal is the foot.
So it's the fifth metatarsal.
It's the fifth metatarsal, which, because I actually broke a foot my junior year of high school, there goes my college baseball career.
Yeah, right. Would have been a star.
I would have been a star, believe me. I had Kevin O'Sullivan went to one of my baseball games once to watch the opposing pitcher.
But whatever. He saw me, yeah. Right.
The fifth metatarsal is the worst one to break because it's on the outside. It's the pinky toe.
It's the one everybody breaks all the time.
It's the orthopedic hour with Dr. Pincus.
Yeah. That's not the one you want to break, though.
Okay.
Out of all the ones, that one's probably the worst.
Right. Out of all the metatarsals, that was metatarsals. It's the worst metatarsal to break.
God, so anyway, the point was Jenkins had surgery this morning and will not play in the bowl game and will not be a part of bowl practice. So
tough year for him too.
So yeah, it really is.
Because he was looking to be. He's got talent. He has speed. He can cover.
Yeah, he might not be back.
I think he has to.
Yeah, to help his stock.
He could barely
play this year.
Yeah, he could be a second round, first 3-round pick. I don't think he only has so much.
Hey guys, I'm injury prone. Draft me.
Yeah,
he didn't.
He's got to go through a season mostly healthy.
No, these are not the injury prone injuries.
Hamstring.
Breaking that one is, but the other two are just kind of random things that happen. I don't know. I think he could leave early because he's still one of the best coverage linebackers that there is in college football, and people are going to like that, especially with the NFL being as pass happy as it is. But totally different topic. What I was getting at was the idea that we saw how Purifoy used the bowl practice time and carried it over into this year. If whether or not you think Jenkins is gone, Morrison, could be now the guy that uses that practice time that way and carries it over into next season. So we talked a little bit about him, but is there anything else you guys want to add in terms of what he brings to the table at that spot?
He's so scary.
I
was going to say, if there's one player that we I was stuck in a death match with, Morrison would be the one person that I wouldn't want to face. Easily is definitely
easily
out there.
Your face.
Morrison, Floyd's a big dude. I think
Elam's
a little scary.
Floyd's a teddy bear, man.
But Antonio Morrison, only a freshman, to play like that? Jeez.
The crazy thing about Morrison is that Quinn was talking him up during camp.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, Dante Fowler, Bullard, all these guys. And then, Morrison's the guy who's made, the biggest impact of all the,
Yeah, and they're big into talking about how he's from Chicago. I don't know if people from Chicago have, a certain thing, but they're into
that.
Don't
you listen to, Kanye West, all the hard streets of Chicago,
he's a tough dude.
Yeah, and I thought one thing that Muschamp said this morning that actually kind of jumped out to me a little bit was the idea that Morrison has a certain value because the teams he played against in high school, ran a lot of power stuff, and he's worked against that, whereas there's so much spread in high school now, and I thought that was pretty interesting, but despite kind of the rankings being whatever they are.
He's a strong dude, too. Yeah. If you look online, he had a 600-pound squat in high school. I don't know how we can show the viewers that. That's impossible on a podcast.
Yeah, we can't really. I mean, we might link the video in the description. That could be
we
fun.
We should. And it's pretty impressive. That's something I can never do.
He's
about half that.
He could squat 2 Omar Hunters.
Among the things football players can do that I can't, that's one of them. I guess
you could squat. He can squat, you know, 150.
Hey, no, I'm better than... Okay, I'm not going to get into it.
Okay, two.
One thing, one last thing I think we need to talk about, and it's weird to go touch on a negative after how great that game was, but the penalties. 12 for 101 yards, it continues to be an issue, and I don't bring it up because it's like they have to get it fixed before the bowl game or something like that, but from the perspective of, are Will Muschamp teams going to have discipline problems or penalty problems or anything like that based on what we've seen through 2 years of it being as bad as it is?
It's a tough one. I mean, you look at LSU the past couple years with Les Miles there, and they're always a very highly penalized team. But they've been very good. And then you look at Alabama, they're barely any penalties, and they're you know, pretty good as well. I don't know how you can judge that. Has the penalties really hampered Florida that much this season?
Well, Joe wrote that maybe against Georgia they would have made the difference.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, there were several instances against Georgia where, you know, not running 12 men on the field after a timeout probably would have helped.
And I don't know how they factored into whichever drives led to points or whatever, but yeah. It's still, there's a possibility. I don't know.
Now, during training camp, Muschamp said there's zero evidence that says that penalized teams can't win.
Yeah.
And So, and like, you go off the LSU example, you go off Florida this year, it doesn't look like it's going to be a detrimental issue, but it's one of those little things where in a game like the one against Georgia, or maybe if you don't have too many men on the field or you don't do an illegal substitution here or there, maybe third and six becomes third and one and you keep that drive going. I mean, like, it's just, I mean, it's tiny things. It's not something you can, I mean, it's not like a huge detrimental thing, but I mean, you know, those are going to pop up eventually.
Yeah. All right, so I guess now that we've talked about every aspect of this game, I can ask the question, do you guys feel like this was the best, most complete game Florida's played this year? Because for me, I thought it definitely was in terms of who they played and how well, maybe not for the whole game, but for how well they played in every aspect in terms of hitting some passing plays when they needed to, running the ball when they needed to, stopping the run and stopping the pass, just all around, just complete game. I thought this was it for them.
This was the best game all season. I mean, if you look at it, considering the circumstances, where they were, who they were playing, how they played against them the last 2 years, this was a, you know, put up or shut up game for Florida. If they lost this game, I mean, there would have been a little bit of doubt as far as, you know, what I think what the Gators are doing going forward. But now that they win and they pretty much dominated the fourth quarter, it's, you know, the future for Florida looks very bright, and Will Muschamp said that today, that they're going to be, you know, very good for a long time. And this game reaffirmed that, I think.
Yeah, I look at this game and I look at South Carolina too, but I feel like this one was probably, I mean, like, you end on that high note, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, Florida to accomplish what they did this year and then to go to Tallahassee and lose,
yeah,
I feel like would have been, like, just staggering.
Well, if you like the South Carolina,
I mean, like, not,
game,
like, completely detrimental to, yeah, everything, but, I mean, like, you know, it would have been, I mean, obviously, for reasons, like, a win here was,
yeah, right, it would have, losing would have changed kind,
yeah,
of the memory that you take away.
Well, there's a lot of fluky things in the South Carolina game.
Yeah.
Yeah, the defense did force some turnovers, but how many?
The fumble and the kickoff.
Yeah,
and all
it's
that,
just,
yeah,
like, when does that ever happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, they got another one. Florida State fumbled the kickoff,
yeah,
too.
Well, just...
They're good at that, I guess.
No, not so much just fumbling the kickoff, but the first play of
the
game. The
general weirdness,
yeah,
of it, yeah.
Just, the offense didn't really have to do much because they had the ball within the red zone, you know, an awful lot. And I think Florida State was their first real complete game.
Yeah.
And against South Carolina, offense did not run the ball.
True.
That,
yeah,
that is true.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't pass for 100 yards,
yeah,
I don't think. So, yeah, they just generally,
I mean,
didn't have to do anything.
They did everything this game.
Yeah. But because later that night, USC did not beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame's still number one.
Damn, yeah, Lane Kiffin.
The winner of the SEC championship is going to go on to the national championship to face Notre Dame in all likelihood. So
I'm sorry, though. That goal line stand, the four plays he ran, it four plays in a row, did not. Oh, and then he passed.
They
it.
Had the terrible pass.
He passed it on the fourth
to the
down.
Guy who isn't Marquise Lee or Robert.
Yeah, why
aren't
you throwing it to Marquise Lee four times in the corner of the end zone?
That's well, cool. They threw it to him two times in a row, and he got
pass interference.
So, like, then they got bored, yeah, I guess.
Just put him at quarterback and let him run or throw it. I'm sure he could probably do it.
He'd figure something out.
Whatever they have that kid back there,
but But yeah, anyway, the point is now it looks like Florida's going to end up in the Sugar Bowl, and there's a whole lot of conjecture about who they could play. Do either of you really understand that deeply?
I've heard Oklahoma.
I've heard Oklahoma as well, but I think things can get screwy because the Big East sucks. So one of their champion is not going to be ranked ahead of Kent State, who will rank in the top 16. No, Kent State from the MAC. If a non-Big
Six... Kent State, really?
Yeah. They're number 17 right now. So if a non-Big Six team finishes in the top 16, then that team, and is ahead of a conference champion, then that team gets an automatic BCS bowl, which screws everything up in terms of who Florida might play and everything like that. But Oklahoma is one of the possibilities that I've heard as well.
I was talking to Matt Watts today. I was like, it would be funny if Florida ended up playing Kent State in the Sugar Bowl and then Kent State beat them, because Kent State also knocked them out of the College World Series, so Florida would become, like, property of Kent State, which I thought would be funny. You know, the Golden Flashes would, be stomping all over the Gators.
Yeah. That would be kind of ironic. Yeah. It's definitely ironic. All right, now that we've thoroughly wrapped up the game recap, we're going to go to our weekly awards, which are the Ahmad Black Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport, and the Will Hill Awful Life Decision of the Week. So we'll start with the Ahmads, and we'll have Pincus lead us off.
All right. First things first, I'd say best decision. Good thing that happened. Dolphins with the W, the game-winning field goal as time expired. And the best decision in my life was watching Homeland and Dexter last night. It was quite good.
Oh, good story.
Not that anyone cares.
But now, on the Dolphins, I'm glad that they have, a game-winning field goal because, well, one, I like the Dolphins. But the field goals have not been so kind to them this year
compared to previously.
So
kickers, they're ruining the game of football.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. In some edition of The Alligator, you'll be able to read about that. So just pick it up every day for the next few months, and it'll be in there somewhere. Joe, what's yours?
Not to piggyback off Pincus, but the Jaguars actually won a game, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and Chad Henne did really good, right?
Yeah, Chad Henne played like a quarterback.
I love me some Chad Henne.
I mean, he wasn't Blaine Gabbert, which was, pretty cool.
Yeah, because Blaine Gabbert's so bad? Have you given up?
Yeah, I was a conductor of the Blaine train for a while, but then,
he just jumped off?
Well, the times are different now. Now you got the Model T and Chad Henne, and eventually the Jaguars.
See the Model T?
The Model T Ford.
No, but why is that Chad Henne?
Because he's just slightly improved, and eventually the Jaguars will graduate to, more advanced modes of transportation.
Ah, okay. I see what you're saying.
So, the Model T was cool for a while, and then, unfortunately, the Broncos and, the guys are driving F-16s, but, it's just the way it goes.
Good stuff. All right, I'm giving mine to Jadeveon Clowney. For at least the second time this year. Had 4.5 sacks on Saturday.
That guy a lot.
Had 4.5 sacks, and he's playing hurt. He's a bad knee, and he has a bad foot.
Jadeveon Clowney's like the greatest football player ever.
He's a freak. I think he's going to win the Heisman next year. I'm going to call that now.
Oh, yeah.
As your Gamecock guarantee.
That's my Gamecock. Yes, exactly. The Gamecock guarantee. Well, yeah, because Manziel's going to be around still.
That's true.
And there's going to be...
Does South Carolina play A&M next year?
I have no idea.
That'd be so sick.
But Manziel's going to be around still, and some of the other top contenders are going to be back. I wish I could remember who they were, but I was going through this the other day. Anyway,
It's so stupid that Clowney can't go to the NFL now.
Yeah, no, it's a joke.
He'd be a top 5 pick.
Oh, easily. I talked about that as part of a class project I did this morning, actually. There's guys that like him where, what if their family had been in a situation where they needed the money and now he can't go? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me because he has nothing left to gain at this level. But anyway, let's move over to the Will Hill Awful Life Decisions of the Week. And Pink, as you start us off again.
All right. First things first. I don't know if y'all saw this during the game on Saturday, Florida State. But this made waves on Deadspin. And I think someone took a screenshot of it. During the game on ABC, the FSU fan, I think she's middle-aged woman, probably.
Oh, really? I thought it was like a student.
No, it's not. I don't think it's a student. It doesn't look like a student. It looks like she's in the alumni section. She decided to, put some face paint on and use the mirror to put on to apply the paint. And unfortunately, as you know with mirrors, they kind of reflect backward.
Yeah.
So she, of course, did it the wrong way.
Right.
And so part of
me... Just a big USF fan.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really all it comes down to.
It's a backwards S and a backwards F, so I don't know if that would be anything. But part of me says, you know what? I feel for her because I easily could do that. But another part of me says, that's really dumb.
Well, here's the thing. I think this is like a common joke and it happens all the time and stuff like that. But how are you supposed to get this done? Is it like a partner system?
I think it is.
Yeah.
So nobody can do their own face paint because you can't see?
You just can't be an idiot.
Well, you can't like paint it backwards. Would that work?
You can do it. Like,
I don't know.
Joe's like face painting himself, looking at nothing.
It worked.
I think he actually did pull it off. Anyway, I just feel like it would be real difficult. So in some ways, I understand. But anyway, Joe, what's yours?
Well, she...
you have more?
FSU fan. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I knew somebody had to take the shot at some point.
They have pretty girls, and Tallahassee was a lot of fun on Saturday night.
Tallahatchie, yeah.
But I don't know. That school is... Yeah, I guess it's okay. All right, I'm done.
All right, well, personally... I tried to watch the campaign with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis with my parents.
Bad decision.
With my parents.
Oh.
And my parents get offended really easily, which I forgot in my time living away from home. So that was a mistake.
Well, that movie's
Wait a second. Can we get some details on that?
Well, it's just, you know, my parents are really upset by four-letter words.
Okay. It had a lot of them?
Yeah.
Like poop or no?
a little higher on the scale.
Crap.
But big picture, Nick Saban yesterday said that he thinks basically that Florida making a BCS bowl over the SEC title game loser just doesn't seem right. And it's like, well, you know, Nick, you made the national championship game without playing in the SEC title game last year.
Right, that's kind of funny.
So... You basically just bit the hand that fed you very well last year.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, it kind of made, like, I can see where he's coming from, sort of, but then how does he make
just
it? How does he
invalidates.
How does he, after last year, say that? Right.
Yeah.
Well, then Muschamp responded today, too. He said, be careful what you wish for, Nick.
Which was funny. I enjoyed that.
I did enjoy that.
Muschamp's been in a good mood these last couple days,
well,
and rightfully so.
He's been in a good mood this entire season because they're winning. It's funny. He's always cracking jokes.
Oh, I think
some
sexy.
Yeah, he's got jokes.
The one thing, real quick, sorry, before you go.
No, go ahead.
I love, now that we're at the end of the season, I love how these coaches always make up these, like, well-known phrases. They're like, you know, as everyone says, and they say something that's
never
heard before.
It's not add water, instant player, or you get what you emphasize, or right.
Put on your realistic glasses.
it's like they always say. Right. No, they do make up a whole contingent of people who say things that they now then repeat.
Man down, man up.
Yep.
Yeah,
no.
But, all right, continue.
All of the phrases are great. I agree. We should compile all the best at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
But all right. Mine goes to Jalen Watkins. And I didn't notice this play until today.
I didn't notice it either.
I don't know if it happened. I think it must have been like after an interception or on a return or something. But Florida State is kind of just standing around, and Jalen Watkins is trying to throw a block on this offensive lineman. And I don't know, he, like, jumped at him and flailed his arms real weird. And the guy just, like, shoved him in the chest and he just fell back. It looks really pathetic.
He flew back.
It looks really bad.
He was airborne for a good number of seconds.
Right. You could, I'm flying through the air, this is not good.
What number is that offensive lineman? We can do a tail of the tape.
Was it 50?
It's 52.
Okay.
52. So, I mean, and then to make it even funnier, Jalen Watkins today.
Watkins size.
Jalen Watkins today tweeted at JWatt14. That's the last time I try to hit a big A **** lineman like that. Ha ha ha.
That's a three letter word, which my parents also don't appreciate.
Oh, they don't like that either. No. Not big Jalen Watkins fan.
That's that four letter word they don't like, as Kanye would say.
Right.
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah. For those of you who listen to the good album.
Yeah. This offensive lineman, Brian Stork. 6'4", 312 pounds.
while Jalen Watkins comes in at a 6 feet, 187.
Right, so he's got him by
125.
Yes, solid advantage. And if you're going to try to block him, like...
That's like a 6th grader or 7th grader, right?
It just seemed like poor blocking for him in terms of, like, trying to... Like, I don't know what he thought was going to happen. Like, that he was going to push him over. Because you're not...
It's like one of those trying to push over a cow. Yeah.
I don't know if that's an insult to the Florida State offensive lineman or not, but...
He's just a big dude, man.
Big dude.
Yeah.
Just a big dude. All right. So, yeah, that about wraps up the show for this week. As always, send feedback to podcast@alligator.org. We'd love to hear from you guys out there and know what we're doing good, what we're doing bad, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, who you want to hear more of, and who you want to hear less of, too. We have the power to make that happen. We're going to come at you with a basketball show at some point, but until then, and you can keep an eye out for that at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also, you know, pick up the paper and check us out online at alligatorsports.org. We're also on Twitter at Alligator Sports. I'm at Greg Luca. Pincus, you are?
At Pincus_Adam.
And Joe, you're?
At Joe_Morgan.
Yep. So, yeah, I guess football stuff is obviously going to be on a little bit of a hiatus until Sugar Bowl, likely, which would be January 2nd. We would come, obviously, with a preview and wrap up for that at some point. But we might shift gears and get into a little bit of basketball here. Got to see how the schedule works out this week, but certainly a lot going on along those lines, and we have not discussed any of it yet. So have a good bit to draw on and talk about. So we'll see if we get back to that this week. And until then, thank you for listening.